socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. It is August 13th, 2017. Your host today is myself, Jeff. We often have co-hosts, guests, and so on today. It's going to be me taking you through the next 2 hours. We have some very serious things to talk about, obviously, with the fascist murder of a anti-fascist protester in Charlotte, in South Carolina. And we have to talk about what is fascism and how to fight it. And there's local actions against increased right-wing and fascist activity. There'll be a rally today in Worcester, Mass. At 6 p.m. In front of City Hall against what happened, obviously, in Charlotte, the murder of an IWW member, as far as I understand it, the wounding of 15 other anti-fascist protesters by a crazed right-wing fascist, I don't want to say it over the air with the profanity, but you know what I mean, scumbag plowing his car into another car, which then plowed into the counter demonstration, which was forced onto the streets, by the way, by the cops. So the whole dangerous situation was partially started by the cops forcing the counter protesters out of a park and into the streets, from what I understand. And this is a good chance for you to hear on this show, Socialist Alternative Radio, an unadorned, explanation of some of the facts about what happened, but also what some of the fight back is going to be, what we can do about it, and without all the corporate media's disgusting conflation of the two protests. Or if, I don't know if the Nazi thing was a protest or not, the right wing thing was a protest or not, but it was a bunch of fascists and probably clueless right wingers getting together in Charlotte to show their strength, emboldened by Trump, as we've talked about on the show before. The far-right fascists, Nazis, neo-Nazis, etc., are emboldened by the Trump administration getting elected and making a lot of right-wing noises, obviously, and attacking a lot of progressive groups and causes and issues. And that makes the fascists and the right-wing feel like they can go out now and do more damage, basically, and spew their poison. And I'm not conflating, by the way, a right winger like Trump with fascism. And this is not any sort of apology for Trump. Trump is bad enough, as a right winger, that he must be opposed. His administration must be opposed totally politically. But a fascist is a whole other thing, and maybe someday Trump will be a fascist. Who knows what his trajectory is? But a fascist is a far right winger imbued with racist ideology, anti worker ideology, part of a social movement that usually is in the shadows, usually is hidden under rocks. But always kind of kept alive by capitalism, always kind of both the basic objective contradictions of capitalism, of inequality and so on. There's always a rotten segment of society, usually a tiny minority, that takes all the, whether it's a rich fascist or someone that the fascist leaders have managed to drag into their organization, who might be a worker or someone desperately poor, and they blame everything, of course, on the other, through racist ideology against people of color, against black people, through anti-Semitism against Jewish people. Fascism takes on different forms of who they target, but there's always a target. There's always it could be immigrants targeting immigrants, anti-immigrant, vicious anti-immigrant ideology is part of fascism in America, of course, and usually these groups are hidden. Usually they're not well funded when they're small. although they do get funding from rich people and they are sort of kept in reserve. They are usually monitored by the government, but you notice they're not smashed by the government. And we're not calling for that. We're not calling for government action against fascism, because that's just, can be used by the government against any... What the government will do, if you give them the power, they'll just create a blanket law, and they've done this in the past, or laws to really go after... any sort of movement, like I said a minute ago, there's this conflation in the corporate media of you know, the counter protesters, the people that showed up to try to stop the fascists from taking over in Charlotte, and they were in the media that's portrayed. And Fairness and actually in reporting talks about this in an email I got. They're portraying like just, oh, this violence is the problem. This clash of these two equally guilty parties or something. When in reality, the anti-fascist protesters are there to protect people from being victimized. If fascism, like the Ku Klux Klan, like the neo-Nazi parties, the white nationalist parties, and so on, if they get their way, as they have at certain times in history, it will result in lynching, it will result in murder, terror, it will result in a horrible horrible situation for anyone, any progressive, anyone that wants to have free speech or anything. And yet you have the corporate media, including the liberal part of the corporate media, claiming free speech rights when pushed into a corner. They'll claim, yes, these fascist groups deserve free speech. The ACLU, which I used to be a member of until Skokie, and I'll explain what that is in a minute, calls for free speech rights for fascists. We don't. Fascism, real fascism, again, not just a right-wing group or whatever, and you do have to make a judgment, and it's based on what methods groups use. If it's a fascist group, its hallmarks are what it says, obviously, but also what it does when it gets a public platform, which is another thing. We try to stop any real fascist groups from having any public platform. Self-identifying or identifiable fascist organization does not have a right to free speech, because it's basically an incitement to murder. You know, their free speech is going to be to whip people up into a frenzy, whoever they can reach, to go and attack somebody. Whether it's a counter-protester like yesterday, when a member of the IWW, the International Workers of the World, was murdered by a car and 15 people wounded, or whether it's a the way that fascist groups enforce their power in the Jim Crow South, with the blessing of the liberals, by the way, the Democratic Party and so on, made deals with these vicious, apartheid Jim Crow laws and their enforcement by right-wing and fascist, in many cases, terrorist groups like the Ku Klux Klan, and other white nationalist groups. So no free speech for that, obviously. Now, you have a situation in this country now where people are calling themselves the alt-right. That term should be rejected by anyone that's after the truth. There's no alternative there. Right-wing, by definition, is reactionary, a call to the past, make America great again, that sort of thing. But of course, there's elements in that movement that are straight up neo-Nazis, straight up fascists, that of course, that is not progressive or alternative. That is a regressive movement back to fascism, a la Hitler, Mussolini, and others around the world. So it's a situation where we need to really, be able to identify what is a fascist organization. And if identified as such, to take measures necessary to keep them out of public situation, public platform. And this cannot be totally, by the way, just as an aside, maybe I'll get back to this later, this cannot be totally dumped on the shoulders of the left. There can't be any illusions that liberals or Democrats or whoever will actually go out and vigorously protest against fascism. They unfortunately don't usually do that. And when they do, it's not enough. But we should obviously reach out to people that haven't, may, don't understand yet the danger of fascism, the danger of neo-Nazism, the danger of white nationalism, etc. And, you know, try to organize them against fascism. And that's the point I'm making, that if a fascist group like the one in Charlotte, or the groups that showed up, and the right wingers, you know, that's got to be, there's got to be community organizing. There's got to be organizing from all sorts of people that may not understand yet, or hopefully are beginning to understand the threat fascism poses, an immediate threat to people of color, to gay people, to transgender people, etc. And the medium term, or in some cases less than that, threat to everybody else, every other working person that tries to organize a union or tries to do any organizing against Trump, even. I mean, in Worcester, Mass, which is a city 45 minutes away from Boston, where I helped organize as a member of Socialist Alternative anti-Trump protests, there was an element of a far-right fascist element that physically threatened our efforts, with threats over the phone, with threats of driving by in the, you know, the ubiquitous pickup truck with 10 American flags flying off it, and so on. They weren't strong enough to stop us, hurt us, intimidate us in any way. Our protests went on. We were somewhat ready for that. We organized in a way that we could defend ourselves if we had to. But we don't even want to get to that point. We want to say no public platform and enforce that for fascists and drive them, when they try to go on the streets, when they try to rent a room in a public place, a library or something, no, they don't have a right to that. There's no free speech for fascists. Now, again, it gets tricky. You have people, progressives and people on the left that are calling all right wingers fascist. And, you know, some of them will probably turn fascist if their movement grows. But that's not, there has to be a distinction made. You have to make a distinction. And if it's an alt-right group, so-called, and I'm sorry to use that term, I swore I wouldn't use it. If it's a right-wing group, I don't know why I use that. See, I'm getting brainwashed too by the corporate media. If it's a right-wing group that, isn't clearly fascist in terms of their history, in terms of their self-identification, in terms of what they're doing or what they want to be done, does that mean we sit back and just only go after the real fascists? Not at all. That's not what I'm talking about at all. But in that case, it might be more of not driving them away from public spaces, but just surrounding them as much as possible, neutralizing them as much as possible, getting as many people involved to protest them and to shout them down, that sort of thing. But there's a point where there is a line where people have to defend themselves. And by people, I mean working people, people of color, and so on, together, united, in a united front against fascist violence or fascist incitement to violence, a real fascist group trying to gain public space to incite violence against people of color, against socialists and against any progressive people, against transgender people, etc. And that's where that's where the liberals really, unfortunately, enable fascism in a certain way without their knowing it, obviously, in terms of, no, they have right to free speech. I don't like violence. I'm not going to show up. There's no room for self-defense. That's just another form of violence, blah, blah, all that. That's just a recipe for fascist groups growing in influence and growing in strength. And that's probably what's happening now. There's definitely been an increase in hate attacks and in violence. And we'll see what happens now. Maybe Charlotte is a wake-up call. Maybe the death of the IWW member, which is really horrible, really tragic, and the wounding of 15 other counter-protesters. I mean, these are heroes to the movement, and they should be, we should not let them be forgotten, and we should make sure that we use the obvious violence against them, and that it's not an anomaly. I mean, there have been other examples of violence even recently used against for example, Black Lives Matter and so on. And we'll get into that a little later in the show, not much later, because we are going to devote the beginning of this show to fighting fascism, explaining what it is, fighting the right as well. By the way, as I said, today at 6 p.m. in Worcester, I think I said this, in Worcester, Massachusetts, a city, second biggest city in New England, 45 minutes west of Boston, there will be a rally against the fascist terror, against the murder of this IWW member and the wounding of 15 others, and just against the against racism, against the use of racism by these right-wing groups and by the fascist groups, etc. And we will, and against, you know, the against Trump giving them aid and comfort, you know, basically, and giving them little sound bites here and there of the, you know, the ridiculous things that Trump says, and ridiculous is too nice a word, but the racist and right wing things that Trump says, they take that, a lot of these groups, and run with it and go further to the right into fascism. And so this rally today at 6 p.m. in Worcester is very important. Socialist Alternative is involved in spreading the word about the rally. There's a group called Surge that initiated the rally. That's an anti-racist group. And I hope a lot of people show up to that, even if you're in Boston. And there, as far as I know, there was a rally last night in Boston, and it made some corporate media headlines. But this has to continue beyond the so-called news cycle, which is deliberately very brief and deliberately very superficial. And next week, Saturday, August 19th, there's, my understanding is there's one of these right-wing rallies. Maybe there's fascists involved as well. I would bet there would be. And they're going to try to, again, as they did once before, run wild around Boston Common. And that last time, they were able to seize some public space and make themselves feel bigger than they are. And with the murder, the fascist murder that just happened in Charlotte and the wounding of 15 people, of counter-protesters against fascism, against racism, against the right wing, I would bet that there will be a bigger turnout, I would hope, for the counter-protest on Saturday, August 19th in Boston. And I wouldn't rule out that maybe the right wingers and the fascists involved will be too scared to show up, or they will, there will be some sort of city action against their gathering. I'm not advocating that. I'd rather see people shut them down, people surround them, shut them up, but than having the city get involved, because the city, I know from being an anti-fascist rallies, that the cops will often get more angry at and do more against the counter-protesters than they will, and they'll protect the fascists. I've actually seen that. I can explain that, my personal experience with that, unfortunately, in the future. We're going to take a quick break now, because I got a bunch of texts I have to check out. Maybe I'm, that's a kind of a bad example, maybe, but I am getting texts from other, from people in Socialist Alternative and from other anti-fascist groups and individuals, and I have to be following that. And I am the only host today on our show, so I'm going to have to take a quick musical break and check out the latest. But before I do that, I am going to get this music down here. We record all the music we play. By the way, this is WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. I gave our legal ID earlier. I'm just doing it again. And you are listening to WMFO 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio, and this is Socialist Alternative Radio, a subset of that community base. We're on every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., with talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. Today, the first part of the show is obviously dedicated to trying to stop the fascist terror that emerged last night or yesterday against counter-protesters where one IWW member was killed, was murdered by someone slamming their car into the counter-protesters, and 15 anti-fascist protesters were wounded. And these are heroes to the movement. They need to be remembered. They need to be, we need to be organizing around making sure this doesn't happen again. Unfortunately, it will, but we have to fight it tooth and nail, and make sure there's no public platform for fascists, and make sure that the right is no longer emboldened by Trumpism and the Trump administration, and able and thinking they can with impunity go out and set up the stage for fascism, or set up the stage for their own intimidation. I don't know if you saw the pictures from Charlotte, but you had the right obviously there for violence. On the left, it's more about self-defense. And there's the right wingers and the fascists within them are there to, you know, this is they're going to escalate the violence if they get a chance. There's been some conflation again in the corporate media of just all violence is bad, blah blah blah. And some you know, earlier in the year, some Nazis got punched in the face or something after at rallies or something like that. I mean, this is ridiculous to conflate people protesting in self-defense and managing to get a punch in or something to some right-wing or fascist idiot versus the kind of terror and deliberate violence that's just part and parcel of any far-right, any fascist movement, where they're just trying to build up their strength to the point where their so-called strength, to the point where they can, with impunity in certain places, just attack, you know, the left, attack people of color, attack, you know, LGBTQ people. It's just, you know, if you know, they'll and eventually attack the labor movement. People don't understand. There's people right now that think, oh, I'm going to be able to avoid all this. I'll be safe. I won't go to any rallies or protests or anything. And that's exactly what, I mean, you know, that's just a perfect analogy, unfortunately, to how fascism arose in Europe, the classic fascist rise in Europe of people like Mussolini and Hitler and so on. If people, ordinary people, don't get more involved in protesting, then they're going to wake up one day having lost their civil liberties, living in fear, living in terror of in a fascist regime. And that's not right. You know, that's not an immediate perspective in the U.S. I'm not trying to be alarmist, but I'm saying it works. The fascist movement, unopposed, can work its way up to that. And if capitalism feels threatened enough, it will play the fascist card, as they say. It will go after, you know, the labor movement, the left, and so on, in order to completely atomize and disempower workers to the point where they can put forward anything they want to increase their profits and so on. And there's elements of that already happening. I wouldn't call it a part of a fascist movement, but there's elements that the fascists will take and run with that, including the protests where, including people being afraid of protesting, by the way, as part of that. So let me take that quick break. I talked about the musical break, and we'll be back with more about what fascism is and how to fight it. You're listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. Go to WMFO.org. to listen live stream and to get previous shows. And right now we got something from Steve Earle.
long another 394,000 children were born into this world. They break like waves of hunger and desire upon these eroded shores, carrying the curses of history, but a history it's unwritten. The oil burns in thick black columns, the buzzsaws echo to the forest floor. They shout, give us our fair share, give us justice. Here comes the war! Here comes the war! On a grey morning to the south of here, young men in makeshift uniforms peer into the misty light. And figures dart behind the trees as a snap of rifle rounds echoes out across the fields. Well, they hardly know their secret, what they're torn. Yeah, but they recognize the duty to defend the flag hanging limp and bloody above the village church. Well, 1,000 miles away, down by the river, your money men play paintball games. Here comes the war! Here comes the war! Put out the lights on the age of reason! Tell us how those great stories and ones about serial killers. Their dreams flow into savage toy. Cheer the siren screaming out across the city. We had 3 odd nights in succession. The riot season is here again. Dear Lord, lead us back to the valley of the shadow. Born in peaceful times. The whirling dervish spinning around faster, faster. The center cannot hold. Like a whirling dervish spinning, spinning faster. Ah, oh, the center cannot hold. On the age of reason.
New Model Army from their album called Original 20. New Model Army Original 20. Here comes the war. And obviously, you know, we don't choose songs here on Socialist Alternative Radio from some sort of arbitrary reasons. We have well thought out reasons, I hope. And part of fascism and the rise of fascism is always the drumbeat to war. It's a way to control, it's a way to distract, and it's more importantly part of what capitalism does on a normal basis. The normal workings of capitalism are unfortunately the normal workings of war. A much bloodier economic system in terms of war and war against other peoples than even the the biggest empires that existed under slavery or feudal economic systems. Under capitalism, everything's been ratcheted up to almost permanent war. I think there were the statistic that is most often cited is there have been about 17 days of peace on the planet, meaning when there was no war happening anywhere since World War II. I'm sure you could probably knock that down to zero if you really looked at it. And basically what war has to do with fascism and the rise of fascism is that capitalism is the economic system that fascism is based on. Now, does capitalism always use fascism to control workers, to conduct wars? No, not always. When do they do that? When their system has reached such horrible contradictions and such horrible inequality that inevitably there's a movement to overthrow capitalism, or a movement that capitalists think is dangerous to their basic interests, even if it's not a full-blown social revolution. And they bring out fascism, meaning violence, organized violence in an organized social movement to attack any, you know, racial minorities, to attack religious minorities sometimes, to attack immigrants often, to attack, in this country, obviously, it was the main victims were people of color, but also anti-Semitism, to attack Jewish people. There was even a point in the height of the fascist movement in the South under Jim Crow where the Ku Klux Klan was expanding its vitriol and hatred and attacks to Catholicism. You know, if, you know, give them an inch, they'll take a mile is the basic problem with fascism. And liberals that want to say, oh, fascists have a right to free speech, etc., are emboldening fascism. They don't understand its unique nature as fascist speech being incitement to murder, fascist speech being the beginnings of a movement often or in a full-blown movement to kill, to, you know, to end up in the concentration camps, to end up in prisons, to end up in attacks against unions and the left at a level much, much higher than normal under capitalism. I mentioned I was looking at a lot of texts during the short musical break there, and that is true. They're from people in Socialist Alternative, basically, that are helping to initiate or participating in anti-fascist rallies, anti-racist rallies, etc., around the country in the big cities and so on. And there's, like I said, some from where this station emanates. I realize we have international listeners through the internet. Go to WFO.org, by the way, to accomplish that. And check out our Facebook page, Socialist Alternative Radio. So we have international listeners, and but, you know, the show does go out over the air in the area of Somerville, Medford, parts of Greater Boston, and we are promoting the fact that there is a anti-fascist, anti-racist rally tonight in Worcester. It's 45 minutes down the pike west at 6 p.m. in front of Worcester City Hall. There was a rally last night in Boston. There will be another rally, hopefully, I'm pretty sure, next Saturday, August 19th, as a counter-protest to a right-wing and probably a fascist rally or elements of fascism at the rally. Or I don't know if it's a rally. It's a gathering of idiots and scumbags, basically, far-right wingers, fascists, I'm sure, intermingled in there, maybe openly fascist groups, in Boston Common next Saturday, August 29th. And by the way, that is, why are they showing up there? Well, it's what I've talked about. They had a rally there that, from their terms, earlier in the summer was successful and that they weren't shut down, right? They were protected by the cops. There wasn't enough of a counter-protest to shut them down. That, for a fascist, is heaven, because then they are conquering public space. And the whole way to fight fascism is to stop them having a public platform, stop them having a public space. And again, being clear on who is fascist and who isn't. what groups are fascist and what groups aren't. I'm not talking about individual level. That's, of course, really difficult to tell. But I'm talking about what organizations, what is their self-identity, what is their track record, what are they advocating? And if they're advocating violence, which fascist groups do, against the left, against people of color, against LGBTQ people, etc., if they're spewing anti-Semitism and so on, you know, if they're spewing racism, pretty much a fascist group, right? Why do I keep making this distinction? Because I think the tactics are slightly different. If it's just and I'm not saying this is true of the rally next week in Boston. I'm just saying that sometimes if a right-wing speaker shows up or something, we don't assume that they're fascist without any sort of proof or indication. But it's, you know, protest is absolutely necessary for the right, for, you know, for the far right. And, you know, surrounding a fascist shouting down, surrounding a right-winger, surrounding a right-wing speaker and so on, and drowning them out or speaking or debating them if necessary, a right-winger I'm talking about, that's not a fascist, clearly, that is a way to politically out-organize them, among many other ways. But, you know, a straight-up fascist, it's not free speech time. It's defense time. It's self-defense time. And I used the example, I alluded to the example of Skokie, Illinois, back in the 80s, I think it was, might have been even the 70s, where, and I remember being alive at this point, I mean, I was a kid, but, and I was, you know, very sympathetic to the ACLU, and I am sympathetic to the ACLU in general, but they make a horrible, horrible mistake in two ways. One way, the most serious way, is they will defend fascist free speech. This is wrong. This is cutting their own throats eventually if the fascists get power. And in Skokie, Illinois, they defended a fascist public march down a public street. And I'll never forget that. I was against it. I'm still against it. If the fascists want to go talk to each other in their mansions or seedy little basement apartments, you know, that's sort of beyond our control. But public space, public library, a street, no. If they conquer those spaces, which is what they're trying to do, then they're going to go after us. And by us, I don't just mean Socialist Alternative Radio and Socialist Alternative. I mean the entire left, progressives, down to liberals, down to, people, of course, people of color. They'll go after Jewish people. They'll go after LGBTQ people. They'll go after trans people. They'll go after anyone. And they'll go after immigrants. Anyone they can scapegoat. Anyone they think they can make some political mileage out of scapegoating. Any ethnic group, racial group, whatever. And all to the goal eventually, if things get serious enough, for the capitalists, to the goal of eventually smashing any resistance to attacks on the labor movement, to attacks on workers in general, to attacks on the left. That's the real goal of fascism. We'll get into that a little more. But just back to Skokie, you know, there's been other examples, other times I've been involved in anti-fascist protests. And there is, unfortunately, a commonality in the ones I've been involved in the U.S., where the police are much more protective, well, they are protective of the fascists and not of the counter demonstrators. And I'm not saying that to intimidate anyone. You know, if you get enough people there, you'll be okay, even against the cops. But the point is that I remember back in Boston in around 1981, a fascist group based in Rhode Island. This was not a time when fascist groups were that active. The labor movement was stronger and so on. Fascist group in Rhode Island bragged they were going to come to Boston City Hall, a plaza, and they were going to recruit to their little fascist movement in Rhode Island. And I was in college at the time, and just everybody that considered themselves a leftist, this is before, like, you know, social media, computers, personal computers and all that, everyone that considered themselves a leftist just got on the phone and called everybody else. Hey, did you hear about this? I'm going. You going to go? Blah, 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 blah. And, it wasn't spontaneous. There's no such thing as real spontaneity in politics, although people want to say otherwise. But it was close to that in the sense of, people took it upon themselves to do a little extra than they normally would do to, in organizing, including people that are were already organizers of a sort, like myself, but also people that were not, would say, yeah, did you hear about this thing? I think I'm gonna go that, you know. And it was with short notice, and 5,000 people showed up to protest, at least, and City Hall Plaza. It looked like a huge crowd to me. I was in it with my friend at the time, Dave Plant from New Hampshire, and we were among many, many protesters, college students and others. Left groups were bigger then, more left. Well, actually, left groups are getting big again, but this was, left was big at that time as well, bigger in some ways. And so anyway, big protest. The police marched in around a van with, I think it was a police van actually, with the fascists inside, if you can believe it, and opened the door to let them go march. And the crowd, which was very well educated on the nature of fascism, don't need me to tell them about it. They went, there was a sound like sort of a vacuum sound, like a whoosh. And that was the sound of 5,000 people, including myself, just pressing forward to get at the fascists. Just get them at them, get them out. No, you're not going to do this. And it worked perfectly. Just the fear you could see on the fascist face was a beauty, a beautiful thing. And the cops, too. And the cops actually, the fascists started to turn around and get back into the van. And the cops helped them along and then escorted them out of City Hall Plaza. And we were all dancing around with our victory, right? Cops didn't like that. They don't like us to feel our power. They don't like, you know, they don't like the fact that their plans were ruined. So they charged the crowd 5 times. I remember running back and forth 5 times, trying not to get beaten, trying not to get arrested. Hearing noises that sounded like gunshots. They weren't, but sounded like it. And saw my friend Dave fall right next to me. I thought he was shot or something. I was terrified, but he was fine. Got up and ran some more back and forth. Unfortunately, there have been other examples like that. One time a fascist group came to Boston in the 90s. Unfortunately, they got to speak, but it was way off in a corner of South Boston somewhere. And we weren't able to shut them down. And there was a running sort of battle with some right-wing youth in Southie. And you know, so there was a good, okay counter-protest, not the greatest, unfortunately, because it had to go, like, really far from where it started. We lost some people along the way to, I don't know what, intimidation tactics by some, you know, right-wing Southiers at the time. And, you know, I was basically ended up like trying to just defend people against the right-wing kids, which was somewhat successful, but it dissipated the energy of the anti-fascist march. The fascists did get to speak in a way, unfortunately, but with a lot of protest against them. And again, though, what was the thing we really had to deal with in the anti-fascist protest was the cops. You know, any little thing you did, boom. There was a local politician named Tip O'Neill who the corporate media lionized, you know, because he was one of these Democrats that, you know, talks like a working class person and, you know, tries to be a man of the people type, you know, while doing the bidding of big business. Oh, what else can we do? We got to cut the jobs. What else can we do? We got to lay people off. What else? We got to cut the service, you know. Sort of like Walsh right now. Walsh took a play in Boston, mayor, but Walsh, he's like Menino, the mayor before him, ties to the labor movement, unfortunately, which they use as a progressive populist way to put forward the policies of big business that have dominated Boston completely for 30, 40 years or more, maybe its whole history, and just, you know, making things worse and worse for working people. And basically doing so while just talking a fast patter with a Boston accent and not saying much, you know. Oh, yes, we're really concerned about this. You know, no solutions, no answers. We're really concerned about this. And this, you know, mollifies a certain amount of people who are wedded to the Democratic Party, leaders of NGOs, leaders of labor unions that are wedded to the Democratic Party, just, you know, shooting ourselves in the foot, killing working people off in a way. You know, the opioid crisis they talk about, it's never linked to capitalism, you know? It's never linked to what am I living for if all I got to look forward to is declining living standards, can't afford to have a family, can't afford to buy a car, can't afford to go to college, can't afford, you know. I mean, they never linked the opioid crisis to the diminished future of people in this country, most people in this country now. And it's the richest country in the world, and you can see their wealth, but it's not ours. It's being hoarded and used by the rich, the super rich. And if things get out of control, if we actually start to get some power and get rid of jokers like Walsh and Menino and get real working class politicians like Shama Sawant in power in Seattle, like we got through Socialist Alternative initiating a campaign and helping to organize a campaign with Shama Sawant, a member of Socialist Alternative, and getting some of the gains we made in Seattle with $15 minimum wage and so on. If that starts to spread countrywide in many, many different cities, which in some ways it is, I think, although it's hard to prove, but it's the left, growth of the left and so on, growth of popularity of things like a single payer health care and $15 minimum wage and all that, that will be met increasingly with violence. It will be met increasingly with the capitalists trying to crush the movement, trying to buy it off, sure, through the Democratic Party and all that, and trying to... you know, give concessions here or there, but ultimately, when profits are threatened or when they want to launch a war and have no resistance to the war, boom, they'll bring out the fascists, you know, and start funding them more. I'll give you another example. Boston fascism back in the 80s or mid-80s, I was on the executive board of a union and our office was in South Boston. I got the union to sponsor a tour of an anti-apartheid activist named Nimrod Sejeki, who was one of the founders of the SACTU union in South Africa, later became part of KASATU, etc. Nimrod was a member of the South African section of the Committee for Workers International, which Socialist Alternatives in Political Solidarity with the Committee for Workers International. He was in exile after, you know, being forced to leave the country as an anti-apartheid activist. That they were being killed in the 70s and 80s, obviously. So he was in exile speaking against apartheid, speaking for international socialism and so on, as a, you know, for Socialist Alternative, although I think we called ourselves labor militant then when he was around, when he came and did his tour. So in leafleting for this tour in the 80s in around Andrew Station in South Boston, we run into this group called the Southie Marshals, you know, a real fascist group in Southie. And we saw their newspaper. They had a newspaper at the time, and there were ads in it from corporations. Major corporations had ads in this newspaper. You know, there, people that study the fascist movement, the far right movements, they can trace the money to very, very rich individuals and rich corporations. But, you know, at different times, it comes in different amounts. When they feel fascism is necessary, they will, you know, to break or stop an emerging movement, especially a revolutionary movement, a socialist movement. Historically, fascism will be used against that. Now, initially, the kind of far right fascist movements that are happening now in the United States, they don't seem to be linked to that. They don't seem to be attacking unions. Why are you talking about they're attacking unions? Why are you talking about they attack the left? Well, you can see them attacking the left, obviously, but. The left is relatively small in the United States. It doesn't seem to be what I'm talking about. Yeah, no, it's not to the point where the capitalists want to use fascism in the United States. They don't have to. They're not facing that kind of threat. But the nature of capitalist society, which is always imbued with violence and racism and alienation and divide and conquer strategies against the working class, there will be elements, fascist elements that will get into that mix. Right wing elements will get into that mix, of course. If they grow, you'll see more right wingers latching onto a fascist movement and saying, yeah, this is powerful. This is something we can use. This is something we like, you know? And I say if they grow, because I'm not, at all talking sort of gloom and doom here. I mean, this is a horrible, horrible thing that happened. Tragic, vicious violence against the counter-protesters, where one member of the IWW was murdered in Charlottesville and 15 others wounded that were counter-protesting against the fascists there and the right wing there. And that's they're real heroes, the people that protested and sacrificed you know, for that. And we can't forget that. But right now in the United States, yeah, there's a rise in hate crimes. It seems the latest, or actually the poll, the data I have is from earlier in the year, but rise in hate crimes, Trump emboldening the right, and that in turn emboldening a fascist wing of the right. That is definitely happening. But is the right growing in a big way? Are the fascists growing in a big way? That is unclear to me. I don't think they are. I think the left is actually growing in a lot of ways, including Socialist Alternative, including other organizations like DSA, including setting aside that for a minute, whether the left is growing or not. What is the reaction to Trump's policies, right, against the attacks on healthcare, Obamacare, which is a really flawed kind of grasping at straws type thing. There's a few elements of it that people can use. But they're fighting for those few elements, right? They're doing a defensive battle, and so far successful against the attacks by Trump, and Trump's popularity going down. No accident, Trump is rattling the dogs of war for being unpopular. They always do that. They always go for a diversion. It's not a given that it's going to work. Hate to make predictions, We do have perspectives, and our perspectives are that if Trump decides to ratchet up the war rhetoric, you can already see divisions in the bourgeois, in the ruling class, in the capitalist class, about the necessity to conduct a war, because they know it's risky. I mean, the United States is already, unfortunately, the United States ruling class is the most powerful in the world right now, and the most powerful military by far. We've talked about the statistics before. I think if you add up the budgets of the next 18 militaries in the world compared to the United States at number one, that's where they finally match that amount of money, is that you go down to number 18 and add them all up. In other words, 2 through 18. Stuff like that, like ridiculous, like 250 or 150 military bases by the U.S. around the world. You know, you look at a map of the Middle East, chock full of U.S. military bases surrounding it and within it. You look at a map of Russia, chock full of NATO and U.S. military bases surrounding it. The point is that, like I mentioned earlier, fascism is to fight for the capitalists. It's a tool for fighting an ascendant revolutionary movement, from their point of view, a threatening revolutionary movement. And we're not there yet, so a lot of capitalists don't see the need to pull that violent card that sometimes gets out of their control. Look at the history in Nazi Germany. There were splits in the ruling class towards the end of World War II for a variety of reasons, but all along the parameters of, all on the lines of, they didn't have much control over what Hitler wanted to do. They had some, but they didn't have what they started with. And that's been true of other fascist dictators. The ruling class will abandon them at a certain point if they've gotten too far out of control. With Hitler, it was impossible to abandon him because they had so much invested in him and given him, and he'd gotten so much power and so on. But there were disagreements for the capitalist class in Germany, is how to survive, you know, the war intact. Unfortunately, the ones that cooperated with the United States military more or less did survive the war intact, and they put in a capitalist regime after the war, at least in West Germany. Anyway, that's a whole another thing. But the relationship between fascism and war is not accidental. Very much there. But more importantly, the relationship between fascism and smashing workers' organizations. Even if they start out going after racial or ethnic minorities, is a big part of that. And by attacking racial and ethnic minorities, dividing the workers' movement, terrorizing people that may not even be the immediate targets. You know, like how many people now, unfortunately, in Charlottesville might think twice about going to an anti-fascist protest. Well, they shouldn't. They should actually increase their willingness and you know, wanting to go out and fight fascism, incipient fascism, now. There's a good article I'd encourage everyone to read that's listening or tell people about it. Go to socialistalternative.org. It was originally published on June 12th, 2017, earlier this year. An article is by George Martin Fell Brown. Nice. George has got a long name. George Martin Fell Brown. Fighting the Far Right, Socialist Strategy and Tactics. Fighting the Far Right, Socialist Strategy and Tactics. Hashtag resist Trump theory, top stories, U.S. politics, blah, blah. Anyway, socialistalternative.org. That's the website of Socialist Alternative. And it's very good because it tries to explain some of what I've been putting out in, you know, without going into deep, deep examples, or without going into the depth that this article goes into, but, you know, at least not in all everything I put forward. By the way, it is, you are listening to WMFO Medford, that's WMFO in Medford, also known as Tufts Educational Radio, also known as Tufts Freeform Radio, also known as Tufts Freeform Commercial Free and Community-Based Radio. We have a lot of names. We're the chameleon radio station here. And we're this show, starting at 11, going to 1, Socialist Alternative Radio, is a part of that community base. We've been on the air here for about 10 years. Go to our Facebook page, Socialist Alternative Radio, and we are all about talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. And just reminded, I should do a public service announcement because that's part of what we do here at WMFO. And I guess my whole show so far has been a public service announcement against fascism and against the far right or the right. And I would urge you to take it that way. By the way, just jumping out of all the